Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. We're excited. Got a great show in store for you. As always, Stair McFarland, that's me, down here on the south side of town in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick holding the fort down in East Nashville.
East side.
Chase McCabe in Bellevue, representing the west side.
West side.
And Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, which is at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike. And I believe it's just him and Dagwood, at least right now.
I think Dagwood has left the building.
So it's just you?
Your boy's holding down the fort.
Wow.
Proud of you. Proud of you. You're doing a good job.
This is where my background as a former security guard at show venues comes in handy.
Nice. Well,
and you're used to dealing with ghosts, so, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been told there are some wandering around the building, so.
I've heard that, too. Yeah. I can report if I've heard any, if I hear anything. I mean, I'm the only one here, so, I mean, if someone's slamming doors, I should be able to hear it.
I used to work overnights there, and, you know, our little key card thing, it beeps every time you scan it. I would hear that go off in the middle of the night, and I'd walk out in the hallway, and nobody'd be there.
Oh.
And it used to freak me out.
Really?
At like 2 in the morning. Oh, yeah.
See, I've never heard any recent. I've always heard. I feel like it's kind of stuff from the past. I haven't heard anything.
Well, that was
anybody.
That was also like 6 or 7 years ago when I did.
Well, I'm talking about the past. Like, these are stories from people we weren't in the building with. That. So you're saying that stuff happened to you?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I heard stuff all the time. When I was there in the middle of the night, you know, you'd hear different creaks and things were laid out a little different too. You know, our kitchen was in a different spot. And so I would hear stuff in there and then, like I said, the beeps, but yeah, it used to freak me out a little bit being there by myself at 2 in the morning.
Well, Willie knows I've done the overnight stuff by myself in a building and, it is creepy. There's no doubt, especially the building that I'm talking about. Which, ironically, we gave away a gift card to Scoreboard, which was right across the street from this studio, well, where the station was at the time when we were at WTN. And, gosh, it was really weird being in that building, completely pitch black, basically, except for the couple of areas where I was at. Never had any experiences, but it was just always weird and creepy. It's never settling, right? When you're in a building all by yourself.
What was your shift? Back then, Darren, what was your shift?
Well, I would take things all the way until Daryl and Carlo and that whole crew came in.
So what time would you start?
I think I started, was it 10 or was it midnight? I think I went to 6 in the morning. I think it was maybe 10 to 6.
10 to 6. So this is
maybe
before
midnight
you were doing
to
much
6.
On the air?
Yeah, this was at the very, very beginning. So this would have been right at the beginning of the year 2000. So February
wow.
So, of
so
2000.
You started off as part of the graveyard shift.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you give reports, scoreboard updates, or anything, or were you just running the board?
No, you know what I was running? Art Bell.
Art Bell. I'm sure you got
that
some great knowledge
show.
And wisdom from that show.
I just sat there in disbelief every night going, I cannot believe this show. And that show was very popular overnights. And they would just sit there and talk about the craziest stuff. And I just love the experts that Art Bell would bring on to talk about their UFO experiences and everything else.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it wasn't my cup of tea, but, you know, it was a very popular show. And, yeah, that's
but
what I ran.
You were laughing when you said it got great ratings. It did get great ratings.
I mean,
like, massive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Very popular overnight show. And I was literally just a button pusher. No, I didn't even do updates. I mean, I'm pretty sure they could have collected any animal from the Nashville Zoo and probably paid them in food and not money and got them to do that shift. I mean, it was the easiest thing ever. Luckily, I didn't do it very long. Actually, the first on air was when they came to me and asked if I would be interested in doing the bonus hour with you.
And that's where it all began?
Yeah. Which, at the time, Willie, if you remember, was from, I think, 7 to 8, correct?
Oh, yeah.
That's when the bonus hour, 7 to 8. It was late.
Yep. That was the precursor to the – did we start at 7 or did we start at 8?
No, we started at 7, 7 to 10.
Mm-hmm. So we went 7 to 10. Okay.
Yep. Total Sports Experience.
About a year later. Yep.
This moment in Darren and Willie radio history, brought to you by.
It is. I mean, we've gone back and had a lot of time to go back through history. You kind of sharpen up your historical skills. That is an interesting path that you took there, Darren. I didn't remember you doing the overnight. I knew you did some nights. I thought with my predecessor in the evening, who was doing the evening show, didn't you run the board for him for a brief time?
Oh yeah, no.
Before we swapped,
then morphed into that. Remember, I did that before.
Yeah.
Total Sports Experience. But yeah, the overnight thing was luckily maybe a couple of months, maybe 3 months tops. It was somewhere between 2 and 3 months. It didn't last very long, thank goodness. But what stinks is, you know, all the stuff you can do now, like we didn't have any of that. I mean, I could bear fantasy football on or fantasy sports on the internet had just really started then. And so I spent a lot of time trying to become a very good GM at fantasy football and basketball, baseball, anything I could play, hockey, any fantasy league I could play, I did it in that time. But remember, 2000, we just didn't have the options that we have anywhere near what we have today. It was kind of like the internet was just starting to pop, right? Just starting to explode back then.
20 years ago. Yeah. That's just... Well, and it's crazy, too. Whenever I hear you guys start telling these old stories of those days, Darren, and you and I have talked about this privately, of just how much our career paths mirror each other, that I basically, you know, 10 years behind you, but, you know, kind of following, you did overnights, I did overnights, and, you know, things were a little different age-wise, but it's just, I'm sitting here laughing. You tell this story, and like, yeah, well, I did a lot of those things.
Well, what Willie's referring to, like the first like opportunity was, so the bonus hour then, so it goes from Willie and I doing the bonus hour from 7 to 8, and then there was a night, they decided to have a night show from 8 to midnight, a live sports talk show from 8 to midnight, and I was a part of that. So I ran the 6 o'clock hour of sports night, did the bonus hour with Willie, and then was the executive producer from 8 to midnight for the sports talk show. And honestly, that's where the scoreboard came into play, because myself and Denny McGrain and Blake Fulton and Richard Bachschmidt spent a lot of time at the scoreboard when we got done with our shift at midnight. Or we would play an interview, get out early, and head over to the scoreboard. Yeah, that's literally how I found out about the scoreboard. We logged a lot of hours, late night hours, at the scoreboard.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's how that all came about. You're right. We should have had Memory Lane sponsored.
I know. This is good.
We didn't get paid like Christian McCaffrey back then, I can promise you that.
He made some money.
He definitely made some money. And yesterday after our show, the news broke that Christian McCaffrey will indeed be the highest paid running back in NFL history for now. That's the way it always works. And I don't have it. Do you guys have a problem with it? I don't have a problem with him. I mean, he's the best running back in the league.
No, I don't have a problem.
He's an
with
every
it
down back, and I think that's the key, right? He's gonna produce, whether it's, you know, you hand him the ball, you throw him the ball. But everybody here is curious. Affect the market value, Henry. But that's a logical question, right?
I actually didn't hear your question.
I know you cut out on us. We just heard Blump and Henry.
Yeah. I think probably what he's going with is, you know, the comparison between the two of what is this going to mean for Derrick Henry and his contract. And Ryan and I spent pretty much the whole first hour or the 9 o'clock hour discussing that this morning. They're two different backs, but I think Joel Corey told this to Jared and the GM yesterday, if you're Jimmy Sexton, you're totally going to use this as a part of your negotiation. But you also have to be realistic in that they're two different types of backs. That, you know, Christian McCaffrey's a three down back. Derrick Henry is pretty much a two down back, doesn't have the receiving capabilities like Christian McCaffrey does. So I think that it's I think that that's kind of where you have to factor that stuff in, that Christian McCaffrey deserves a little bit more, just what he can do. And I think Derrick Henry will probably slide somewhere in the middle between Christian McCaffrey and Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, I don't really understand when people are trying to see by this deal, what does this mean for Derrick Henry? I don't know. They're not two comparables. I mean, I don't know. People are like, what does this mean for Derrick Henry? I don't think it means anything. That's just my opinion. I don't think it had John Robinson.
It doesn't mean anything?
No. Well, they're not the same back.
I know they're not the same back, but it.
He wasn't going to get paid $16 million a year. So what did it change? What did Christian McCaffrey do for Derrick Henry? They're not comparable.
This is logical. They play the same position. They play the same position.
Well, that's like talking about an elite slot receiver.
I know they go about it different ways.
But elite slot receiver and, you know, a number one guy that stretches the field. I mean, they're not the same. They're the same position, but they're not the same guy.
Well, as Chase pointed out, if you think Jimmy Sexton isn't going to make it a comparable, I think you're sorely mistaken.
But how does he do that? How does he make it a comparable? What's his argument
to
John Robinson? Right, but Christian McCaffrey is way more than just a running back, as we know. That's what makes it unique. I mean, he caught 100 balls last year. Is Derrick
right?
Derrick Henry's never caught 100 balls in his life, in his career.
You don't say, I want more than McCaffrey, but McCaffrey setting and raising the bar higher definitely sets the bar for Henry a little bit below that, and probably higher than it was before. That's my point.
Sexton will probably look at the rushing part and just say, well, you know, Derrick, he's carrying the ball 303 times. He had over 1,500 yards rushing. That's two straight years of over 1,000 yards. You know, Christian isn't carrying the ball as much, isn't getting as many yards. And, yes, you're right. He has the receiving part, and that's taking away some of the carries. It's all about touches that Ryan was pointing out this morning with Christian McCaffrey. But in Joel Corey, I thought, said this best yesterday of there really isn't a comparison between the two, but the agent is going to do everything possible to try and make it one, just to get, you know, a few more dollars and cents out of the Titans. And that's just a part of, and Jimmy Sexton's been doing this a long time, so it's not the first time that he's been faced with a situation like this. I don't know how much of a difference it's going to make, but I do think there's going to be something brought up in these negotiations.
I just, the way I look at it, Jimmy Sexton was going to do that no matter what. He was going to try to put the squeeze on John Robinson, whether Christian McCaffrey got lowballed or Christian McCaffrey was paid the highest running back in the league. I mean, I don't know what it changed. They're not the same. They play the same position, but they're not the same player. They're just not. Like I said, slot receivers are not going to get the same amount of money as a number one elite receiver like Julio Jones. I mean, that's not how it works. No matter how great the slot receiver is, and no matter how great Derrick Henry is, he's not going to get the same amount of money as a guy like Christian McCaffrey and what he brings to the table. I mean, guy had 116 catches for over 1,000 yards in receiving and almost 1,400 yards rushing.
Well, is anybody arguing he's going to get more money? Nobody's arguing he's going to get more money than McCaffrey. I'm just saying it raises the value of what it was before. It raises the bar, whatever it was. If it was 10 or 11 million, I think they're going to use this and justify getting a little bit more.
Okay. We will see. Time will tell. All right, we'll come back. We will talk with Chris Storch from Blue Ribbon College Basketball. There's a lot of things going on. We'll ask him about the scheme, the NBA draft. We've got a lot of things to get into with Chris. A lot of these guys declaring that they are going into the NBA draft. What does that mean moving forward in college basketball? We will do that next here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday. Let's head down just a little south of us. I'm down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna, and he's about 2 hours south of me in Chattanooga. Chris Storch from Blue Ribbon College Basketball. Look, if you want to get all your college basketball news, this is the place. Chris, good morning. How you doing?
I'm well, guys. How are you?
Well, we're glad that everything is okay with you. I know you guys had some bad storms roll through Sunday night and got pretty close to where you live.
Yeah, it did. We have a big wooden fence that circles our yard. It knocked it down like it was made out of cardboard. Mm. So we got lucky, though. Most of the debris in my yard, come to find out, was from other people's homes. I even found torn pictures from people, and that just really kind of breaks your heart when you see stuff like that. I mean, you always think, what's the first thing you're going to go for if there's a fire or tornado? And of course, it's your family photos. And to see those torn up in my front yard, no telling where they came from, it was, you know, that was a sobering moment for sure.
Well, we're very sensitive to that stuff around here. That's what started this whole mess in 2020.
And, it's been a rough 6 weeks, hasn't it, boy?
Yeah, it is. That's putting it mildly. 2020 can go bite the big one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've been dodging wind and microscopic viruses and no hoops.
Yeah.
It's killing me.
I know. Well, we're glad you're safe and sound. That is good news.
Appreciate it.
We'll be thinking about the people who were affected. What has this been like for you? I mean, we're sitting here. This is show 19, Chris, four-hour show, Monday through Friday, all of us from our homes. Everybody's doing things they've probably never done in their life. So how's it been for you?
You know, that's a good question. It's been kind of crazy. I also teach a college sports writing class at UT Chattanooga, and they told us early on that we would probably be out of school for, you know, the end of March, and then came word that it was going to be for the rest of the semester and that we would have to get online. And so I'm using things that I never have done before, like Zoom, but I thought, you know what, I'm going to lean into that and make these classes on Zoom better than they would have been if they were in person. So I started reaching out to some buddies, like the Beatles said, goodbye with a little help from your friends, right? So I stole a trick from Peyton Manning, who popped into a UT Knoxville communications class and shocked the kids senseless. So my first guest was Rick Barnes. And people flipped. And the thing about Zoom, it records them. So I have that. My second guest was Reese Davis. My third guest was Jay Billis. And my fourth was Seth Greenberg. And in today's class, I think I'm going to trump them all. I've got one Willie Donick ready to come on. And it's been really cool because there's no way I could have flown any of those people in. Rick was gracious enough. He was going to drive in. I think it's really because he likes this hot dog place here in Chattanooga. Turns out he's a connoisseur of a good dog. He would have done it for me, but yeah. So we've just kind of leaned into it and made it as good as it can be. So that's been probably as good as I could have hoped. Now I was crushed. As everybody who loves ball is about the NCAA, and it's no secret where I went to school. It was East Tennessee State, and they were pre-tournament predicted to be this year's kind of upset special team. And I have no doubt that they would have won at least a game. They were a really good team, had already won 30 games. So that hurts. You know,
do you know what's crazy, Chris? We had Steve Forbes on the show the day before. Everything was going down. We could tell where it was going, but we had a great conversation with Steve Forbes, and then everything, all hell broke loose the next day.
It's a shame. And, you know, then methodically things started going, you know, Major League Baseball, which I'm a Cardinal fan, the Masters, which there's no better golf tournament. When I used to cover golf, I covered 10 of those in a row, and, you know, there's nothing like it. And so, you know, and then these students that I've been with for a couple of years, their graduation was at first canceled, and now cooler heads prevailed, and they've postponed it into August, so hopefully they'll get to walk and earn their diploma that way. But, yeah, it's been a never-ending period of adjustment with a couple of 150-mile-an-hour winds sprinkled in for good measure.
What did you make of Wisconsin coming out? It's such a horrible, horrible look. The NCAA doesn't always make the right decisions, as we know, but they made the right decision with granting, you know, these spring sport athletes another year of eligibility, and yet Wisconsin came out and said they weren't going to honor it. What did you make of that?
You know, it's a callousness there that I wonder how far removed from actually competing in sports the people who made it are, or whether they ever competed in sports. I think it's shameful and ridiculous. I mean, you know, when Rick Barnes was on my Zoom class, he said he talked to the AD at Lenoir Ryan, where he went to school, and she said that half of their student-athletes weren't going to come back anyway. They had jobs lined up, you know. So I get that if it's the student-athlete's decision. But to not honor that, I mean, I don't know what kind of shape their athletic program is in or what rationale. I'd have to look more into it. But on the surface, I just thought when I first heard about it, it was callous and cold. And to these kids gave that school in their respective sports everything they had, maybe to the exclusion of the real reason they're there, which is to get an education. And they just got shunted aside, and I don't like that. I try to call out injustice wherever I see it, and that's a glaring case of injustice.
We had Dan Wetzel on recently to talk about the scheme. Of course, he was featured a lot in the scheme. The three of us watched it and talked about it a lot on this show. Dick Vitale, who's, you know, always been nothing but pro college basketball, and his love for college basketball and a cheerleader, has done a lot of great things over the years, rarely comes out and says things negatively, and he did after the scheme on Twitter. What did you make of the scheme, and what do you think of the fallout? What do you think is there more to come? Is there going to be more? I mean, we've thought this for years, but it really hasn't happened for the most part.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't understand the politics of the NCAA in terms of, you know, the ability to, okay, you've certainly got the ability to create rules and regulations, but do you have the ability to enforce them? Are you a slave to the almighty dollar? And, yeah, I've heard for years stuff that was going on all over the place in schools that would shock you. And obviously some of them have been revealed. But, yeah, it's a mystery to me, and really, truthfully, it's funny, but, and this is kind of what, you know, when you pay rights fees as an entity like an ESPN, and then you do investigative reporting or whatever, or what do you do when your call on a game. You say you're Seth Greenberg, and you know Coach A has done some things, yet all you can talk about is Coach A's coaching acumen. So there's always been sort of a weird little dance between reality and the admission of reality. And so I don't know where it's going to all lead. I really don't.
Talking to Chris Dortch from Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook, catching up on a little basketball here. And Chris, you've set the bar very high. I'm now a little intimidated for the show today. I knew a couple of your previous guests, but now I really got to make sure I'm sharp later this afternoon.
No, man, you are my boy. I've told no one you're coming on, but I guess I shared with it with some friends and people that I talk to a lot, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on your show. We've known one another for years. We've been friends for years. And some of the best times I've had on radio have been talking with you about basketball. And it was almost always you and I would find, time during the SEC tournament, it seemed like, when it was just you and me on the air. And I really enjoyed that. And the other thing that's so cool about Willie, and your broadcast mates don't know this, but I had a student that said, man, it'd really be cool to get a shadow gig for a pro sports franchise. And I'm looking here at the Predators website, and I said, whoa, wait a minute. The Predators? Yeah, man, that'd be awesome. I said, Willie Donick's a friend of mine. He wrote me back with some expletives like, you're blank and kidding me. And I'm like, no, give me 10 minutes. So I texted Willie and asked him if I had a student who could shadow. And he said, sure. Tell me when he wants to come. And I sent that back to the student. And I think he fell out of his chair. And he showed up. And Willie and the broadcast crew treated him like he was part of it the whole night, the whole day. And he really gained from that. So, yeah, you fit right in with these guys, buddy, for sure.
Well, thank you for the nice words here. So, Chris, let's talk a little more hoops here. We mentioned Steve Forbes before, and this is the kind of program you really feel for, because he really had everything aligned to maybe have a special postseason run, and it didn't happen. But yet, I'm looking at some of the things that you've reported since then. It looks like they're still going to be pretty good. They've got another nice pickup here in the fold. So what's their prospects going forward, and how do you see Steve Forbes over the next few years? It looks like it's just a matter of time before he gets another gig, maybe at a higher level.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago when Ole Miss hired Kermit Davis, the first visit they made to his home was Steve Forbes. That would have been a good fit, but Kermit's done a good job and will continue to do so. They had a little bit of a struggle this year. Last year, Steve Forbes was number two at Arkansas. If Eric Musselman had said no, he'd be there right now. And truthfully, and I've even talked to Steve about this, he's in no hurry to leave, but he said that another byproduct of the NCAA being shut down was the so-called coach du jour syndrome, where a coach of a mid-major gets red hot, and all of a sudden these ADs that don't know any better think that they need to hire this guy. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. In the case of Steve, it would have worked. But, yeah, they got Jalen Johnson, a transfer from Tennessee, great pickup. They got a kid from Hartford, a double-double rebound guy, whose brother was already on scholarship. He had transferred in from Southeast Missouri. So Steve likes to deal in transfers, and he has a unique talent to mix them all together.
Let's talk about the NBA draft coming up. Saban Lee had a tremendous season for Vanderbilt, and all of a sudden, about midway through the season, especially after Aaron Nesmith went down, he was really the focal point, and a lot of scouts were saying, hey, this guy could play at the next level. I'm not sure I would have thought that a couple years ago, but now he's going to test the waters, although he hasn't hired an agent yet. So what you think or what you've heard about his prospects at the next level?
Well, I think he's, as you guys know, he's an elite athlete. And you have to have an elite skill to be there, whether it's as a shooter, a defender, a rebounder, a shot blocker. You've got to have one NBA-level skill, and certainly he's got elite athleticism. And if you'll notice, as the year went on, he turned himself into a more reliable three-point shooter, which can only help him. And he can distribute. So he's a true combo guard. Now, you know, I don't know about his size for that level, but I guess they're going to find out. It's really tough right now. I'm doing my series of columns for NBA.com, and this week I did one on Zeke Nagy from Arizona, and he is sequestered up in Minnesota where he lives and working out with his AAU coach, and that's the only place he can go. They can't get on planes and fly and do workouts and have interviews, and that's going to hurt people like Saban Lee, who needs to show in a workout setting, hey, I'm as elite as some of these guys who are working out. And also that he's smart. I mean, he went to Vanderbilt, so he's got some academic and some brain power to put on display too. And so I think it's going to hurt him a little bit. I think if he feels like, this is just what I've heard, I have no idea whether it's true, but I've heard it from a lot of people that even if he doesn't go to the NBA, that he might not be back and might consider transferring. So, you know, he's leaving his options open. He's smart not to hire an agent. So many kids do that. They get talked into thinking that they're going to make it, and they just don't.
We're talking to Chris Dortch from the Blue Ribbon Yearbook. And, Chris, you know, the SEC tournament, of course, was supposed to be here. It got started and then ultimately canceled. And many were looking at Tennessee to see what was going to happen with them. It didn't look like they were going to make the NCAA tournament. But I'm just curious of what your thoughts on their season overall were. And does this pause or does this cancellation of the tournament, of the postseason, maybe help them at all that, you know, it's just going to, people are going to just put this year as a wash and more of an incomplete than anything?
You know, that's a really good point and one that I hadn't pondered until you said it, but it could be true. I think that had the tournament continued, they probably would have scrapped their way into an NIT bid. And once they got there, you know, Rick Barnes is not going to let up on the lash. They might have won a couple of games. So then you go from being a 17-win team to a team that's maybe won 21, 22 games, and maybe they're not flying under the radar. Right now, a lot of people think it was a down year, but I think it was one of Rick Barnes' best coaching jobs ever. When you talk about losing Lamonte Turner, you know, whatever it was, 10, 12 games into it, it was total shock. Nobody knew about it until he told the press. He told the press before he told Rick. And this kid was he was hurt, but he was having a great year. He was leading the league in assists at 7 a game. He was fourth in the nation in assist percentage. He had just, the night he quit, he had a double-figure assist game. He had 3 double-figure assist games. That tied the school single-season record, and he had two-thirds of the season to break it, and I think he would have. Had he not been hurt, had that shoulder surgery worked, which it didn't, and he was shooting it like he could and playing like he could, I think Tennessee would have been another NCAA tournament team without question. We wouldn't have seen the Santiago Vescovi story, I don't think. He might have still come and played a role, but I think they'd have been just fine. Now, without him, I thought they had a pretty representative season. I mean, you look at the win they got up there at Kentucky. Kentucky was red hot at the time and won 8 in a row. Tennessee hardly ever wins up in Ruff, and Kentucky hardly ever loses up there, and that was a great win. And you look at how guys like, you know, Fulkerson have improved, and Eve Pons has improved. And so, yeah, I thought it was a salvaging as best they could. Now, going forward, they are flat out loaded. They're going to play 9 or 10 with no drop-off. They're going to be able to press. They've got length. They've got athleticism. They're going to be relentless on the defensive end. They're going to run as much as possible offensively. And now they've got some guys that can go get baskets. Victor Bailey, the Oregon transfer, I actually talked to Rick about him last week. He said, you know, sometimes the kid gets in a hurry, but here's what he can do. He can go score, you know, whether it's putting his head down and going to the rim. He's a 40% three shooter, and he's a 90% free throw shooter. And then they've got these five-star guards coming in. And then they got E.J. Anasicki, who's a double-double guy. A lot of people say, well, when mid-majors transfer to upper majors, you know, they don't really do that well. And statistically, that might be true. But Willie knows this. Rebounding is a statistic that travels from level to level, from high school to college, from mid-major to upper major, from upper major to the NBA. If you've got a nose for the ball and a willingness to board and the knowledge to box out and some strength and anticipation, that'll translate. So now they've got a kid that's very similar to Grant Williams that they could plug in, and I think they'll be a top 10 team, and who knows? You know, the virus is leading us all around by the nose. We don't know what's going to go on or when the season will start, but I think Tennessee is a team that we'll have a chance to maybe win the national championship.
Hmm. Pretty strong words. Enjoy today. Don't forget to bring up Winter Park in your Zoom discussions. Willie is a one seed in Winter Park's bracket down there in Florida, so you might want to bring that up. Willie will not, but you can bring that up. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks.
Chris Storch, Blue Ribbon College Basketball. Pretty strong words there about UT. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Pretty interesting tweet that we all saw. That was out there from AD John Cunningham of the University of Cincinnati while we were talking to Chris Storch that the Bearcats have discontinued men's soccer effective immediately. Now, just think about that. That news is coming out as we sit here today on April 14th. I expected stuff like this probably months down the road, especially. Actually, even longer than that is trying to figure out what happens with football, as we've talked about. That's why we've continued to talk about they have to have a plan, because football not playing this year is not a plan. It's just not. I know we have to be safe and we have to do the right thing, and we are. Okay, we are. But if football doesn't play, we've already been talking about it. The ramifications are going to be huge. This is the start. This is just right here is just the pimple on the elephant's butt. Because if they don't play football this year, whoo, good luck having any sports in the NCAA at any school other than football, basketball, and maybe baseball. Good luck.
Yeah.
Because it's all going to go away. That's why I said, and I continue to say it, we have to do the right thing, and we are. But sitting on our hands and sitting inside for the next 6 months is not going to get it done. We'll sink everything. We can't do that. So we have to come up with options. We have to come up with other ways to do this. And I hope that they are having the real discussions about football, because as we've seen enough ADs already come out and say, hey, football pays most all the bills. It doesn't pay everything, but it's like 80% of the budget. There's already a bunch of Power 5 schools that have said, well, I don't know what we're going to do. We don't have that football money. They're already going to get lesser checks because the NCAA basketball tournament has been canceled. So they're already going to get a lesser check in 2020 to begin with. They've already lost millions already, all these schools. And we've talked about how really none of these sports – other than basketball and football, make any money. There are some that get it done on the baseball side. Not very many. But usually all these sports, and it's not, you know, they're not in the red by 50,000. Some of them, they're millions losing money. So this is the harsh reality of all of this. I'm just surprised that we're reading the story on April 14th.
Yeah, I'd have to take a look into what the status of Cincinnati men's soccer was. I do know that over time, as Title IX has been a thing and schools have adapted, it does seem like over the years, men's soccer is one of the first that has shrunk due to Title IX. It was already a program that was tough to sustain outside of the best programs going. So I'd like to take a look at how many kids were on scholarship for men's soccer. So that's an interesting one to make that call. Like you said, Darren, I'm surprised that that's gone on this month to make that call now on a program that I would imagine doesn't have a whole lot of scholarship money invested in it, which may make it more expensive. I'm not sure. But, yeah, we'll see if there's any more domino effect from this. But I just keep going back to the same thing. And just every time I watch the news, it gets reinforced for me. I completely agree with you, Darren, that as we go forward here, and it's not today, maybe it's the start of May, maybe it's the middle of May, but as we start to ratchet things back up, it seems like the testing is the big thing. We've got to be able to test better. And once we get there, then I think we'll be in a position to do these kind of things. But I got to figure by the fall, we'll have a better sense of what can be done to salvage the college football season. I hope. But the complicated thing is on the college campus, the players are students, right? How are they going to school? What's their individual school doing to try to conduct class? It could be very different in Cincinnati as compared to Los Angeles or compared to New Jersey or Florida.
Well, isn't it, you know, realistic to think that even in the fall they could be doing online classes? And, I mean, you'd have to have the football team obviously
Absolutely.
Together and
sure.
probably self-quarantining, but I think there's a good chance that they start the fall semester, you know, go through the summer semester and start the fall semester with online classes. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all.
No, but that doesn't really change anything. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I think that is a very – in fact, I would lean probably more towards that than anything. But that doesn't really change anything. For me, you know, they've already been doing that, right? I mean, that's just – it's just like this. I mean, now that we're doing this, it's – again, okay, it's – It really hasn't.
Right, but there are some schools that are online classes, but the students are not even on the campus, right? In some cases, you're doing it from your home.
Most cases they're not. They're all at home. Yeah.
Yeah. I would. Is there a scenario? I'm hoping that most schools by next fall will be back on campus. Maybe still trying to figure out how to do the social distancing.
But oh, I don't
virtual,
know if they will be.
I was going to say if you're virtual, if you're doing things the way you've been doing them, why it's either you're all back, either it's all back on or it's not. I don't know how you – why would you be back on campus if you're taking classes online?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, Vanderbilt tried to do that, and they quickly had to get shut down because, you know, there were some cases in the dorms, and they were like, well, this is not going to work. So I think some people found out the hard way. But I'm hoping that in a few months, with testing and with better data to figure out, you know, how it spreads – Have we flattened the curve? All of these things put together, it could be a clearer picture on how you could do it. But that's going to be essential if you're going to have a college football season.
Well, and don't we agree, though, that if this system is working, and I'll use it not only for college campuses, but for us, for instance, if there's not a, you know, if there's not a vaccine, which is not going, there's not going to be one for a while, and we make the decision as a radio station, hey, you know what? We could come back and have all of you in a building again, but let's just be safe for now. This is working. We're making this all work, and college campuses look at it the same way. Of, you know, we're just going to do online classes until we know for sure that we have a way to combat this. Now, as for sports, I don't, you know, that's going to change things. They're going to have to figure that out. It could be a system similar to what MLB's throwing out there or the NHL or the NBA of, you know, having all of the teams not all of the teams, but having some teams close together. Maybe you have the SEC go to a certain spot and find a neutral site. I don't know, but I have a feeling that that's going to be the norm, at least for the foreseeable future, because we're all making it work, and therefore it's helping to flatten the curve. You don't want to just go back to normal and then all of a sudden this thing right. flares up again. That's what everybody's worried about.
No question about it. And then I think the and Darren, you can, you know, I don't know how much you've talked to some of your friends who are doctors, but from what I'm told too, another crucial thing, of course, is to not overwhelm the healthcare system. You can't let the healthcare workers continue to get slammed, right? You have to get to a point where, okay, yeah, the virus is still out there. It's still going to spread. It's not going away. But we're at a point now where the curve has been flattened, and hopefully the worst is behind. The testing is better. The protective equipment is better. And as people continue to get sick, it's not slamming the system, that it's a manageable number that keep coming through to get treatment in the hospitals, that sort of thing. That's an essential part of this equation.
Well, what in my conversations with friends that I have in the medical field, who are doctors and what have you, the problem that they're having right now is you would think everybody in the medical field is safe with their jobs, right? As in, they've got more hours than they know what to do with, and that's just simply not the case. They're having to cut hours with people because, remember, the only thing that is being done is, if it's not essential, it's not getting done. Like for example, Dr. Rob Greenberg, who's been on our show many times over the years, who's done my knee surgeries, he's an orthopedic surgeon. I don't know what he's doing these days. They're not doing – it has to be really, really extreme for them to be able to do anything. Well, guess what? That's – he's got a big staff. He's got a big office. Yeah. And so if he's not doing
and you're saying
surgeries,
those people are not being redirected into the essential areas of.
I've got a very close friend who's an anesthesiologist, and right now he has done nothing but been cut because they can't stop having babies. Basically, he's going to be working people, you know, that are going to have a newborn. Because that doesn't stop.
Ma'am, you're going to have to just wait. You're just going to have to. We can't do this right now.
Right. I mean, yeah, you can't send people, redirect people to stay at home and do it. I mean, so that, but the things that, you know, he's been cut and, or his hours has been, not he, but hours have been, the people in the, Dr. Peter Cobb, who we wanted to have on in the last 2 days, and I'll just tell you what he's told me. He's booked up and he's had the same deal because of what they've been dealing with. He hasn't been at, they got to juggle hours and because we're not in the same working, you know, fashion that we're accustomed to. And so they're having to do things differently. So it's not what you think. You would think anybody in the medical field, they've got more hours than they know what to do with. And that's just not the case. And so a lot of these places are understaffed because they've had to cut people's hours back because they're not doing things. It's not normal operating procedures. And so they're having to make adjustments. So just to kind of let you a little bit behind the curtain of some of the calls and conversations that I've had, that it's not what you think. And so that's once again what I'm talking about. At some point, we have to come up with solutions to get back out there, whether it's wearing a mask all the time, whether it's wearing a mask and gloves, whether it's, you know, I went to Academy Sports yesterday. I didn't go in because the line was really long, and they're letting very few people into a massive store. So I didn't go. But, you know, they've got everybody at a safe distance, and they're not letting very many people into a massive store, which I was a little confused by that. But nonetheless, Home Depot, I stopped in there. They were doing the same thing. But there wasn't really a line, so I was able to go in. But if that's what we have to do moving forward to get everybody, even if it's, you know, restaurants, whatever, you can only seat, you know, the table in the corner and the table in the other corner and the table in the other corner and this table, keep everybody at a distance, take tables away to keep every, you know, you're not going to be sitting on top of people in restaurants. But we have to come up with ways to get people back. That's what I'm getting at. We just can't keep doing this.
I think that day will come. eventually. Just the key is not to do it too early, not to do it too late, right? That's why these things are really difficult. But
We're not talking about
so
now
fast.
Or this month. We know that.
Yeah.
This month is what we've been doing. Okay, this is what April is going to be. It may be what May is going to be. I think, and maybe, hopefully, it's not. Maybe May is where we start. You know, everything starts coming back around. But, you know, the way I look at it, I feel like June 1 is like the big date. Like, we have to know what we're doing moving forward by June 1. Do you guys agree or disagree?
I'd agree.
I would hope so. I mean, you can't know that we'll know, but that would have to be something we hope, right? We have to hope that we know a lot more than we do now on June 1st.
Right. We can't be sitting here saying the same things that we're talking about today on June 1, or we're in big, big trouble. Sports is in big trouble, right? I mean, if we don't have any solutions and there's nothing concrete out there, like this is what we're doing by June 1, oof. Boy, I don't even want to have that discussion. I don't even want to think like that, because that to me would be very, very bad. We'll come back. Alan Bell, 24/7 Sports. We kick off the second hour with him. We do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you can win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No.